Trojan fans, it's time for another installment of the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. We give you the inside scoop on everything about USC football recruiting from the experts who know what they're talking about. Which players have an offer, which ones don't, who the coaches like, and who our experts like. And now, here are your co-hosts for the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham and USCFootball.com national recruiting analyst Gerard Martinez.
Hello, Trojan fans. We're going to talk some USC football recruiting today with Gerard Martinez. You can follow him on Twitter at GMartLive. Does a great job covering the USC Trojan football recruiting machine at USCFootball.com. Welcome in, Gerard. This is our premium podcast, by the way. So just for USCFootball.com subscribers, we do appreciate you being a member of our site, the biggest USC site out there. And part of the reason, or maybe a huge part of the reason, is the way Gerard Martinez covers recruiting. Does a great job. Welcome in, Gerard. How are you?
I'm doing well. Been a long time, it feels like. I feel like I'm sort of on the outside looking in with the podcast these days. It's all team-oriented. You got Dan, you got the Harvey Hyde, you've got the two young, the youngins in Keeley and Chaka in your live show. And so I have to, like, convince Ryan these days, like, hey, I think we should have a podcast that has something to do with recruiting. And sometimes he's got time, sometimes he doesn't have time. He's going to have a lot more time, though, going forward, because we're at the edge, the event horizon here of the recruiting season as we get into November. And UCLA weekend inches closer, and that's going to be the first big weekend for recruiting. So Ryan's going to get all the recruiting that he wants here in the next couple months.
Yeah, it's been, you know, a little bit of a hiatus on the recruiting front. There's obviously a lot of stuff going on with the team, and we've been doing a ton of podcasts, but this is our only premium one. This is our one for the subscribers only. So we do like doing these. It gives a little extra benefit for being a USCFootball.com VIP member. Yeah, we were going to try to do one last week. It's so crazy. Like, I end up doing one with Harvey Hyde, with Dan Weber. I'll do a preview. Like, we had Adam Munster Tiger on this week, and I'll do a solo show because we still get a lot of extra questions. So I'll answer a bunch of those. Then, you know, we'll do our live show, and then Keeley and Shotgun will do their Family Feud podcast. So it gets a little nuts, but we do have to fit these recruiting ones in because it's important. And this is the time of year, Gerard. I mean, I guess, you know, that loss to Notre Dame certainly set things back a little bit with a couple of local highly ranked players on that visit. But, you know, getting back on track, beating Arizona State, beating Arizona, seems that probably helps out a little bit, I would guess, on the recruiting front.
Yeah, it evens out. You know, I think the fans, and we talked about this actually right before the Notre Dame game, because you'd kind of ended it like, this is going to be a huge game for recruiting. And while that's a great sales pitch, and there's a lot of websites that love to just build up things and make this the biggest thing for recruiting and that the biggest thing for recruiting, it's just like the season. It sort of has to play itself out, and there's not really one event or one thing that's always going to be a huge deal for recruiting. And that game, win or lose, wasn't going to be a huge deal. Now, certainly USC losing the way they lost, and having Solomon Tuliala-Pupu and Amon St. Brown there and their official visits to Notre Dame wasn't a good thing. You don't want to be embarrassed at all in front of recruits. You don't want to look like a program that's in disarray. You don't want to look like a coaching staff that doesn't have any answers. And unfortunately, that's what USC looked like in that loss to the Fighting Irish. And so they have to reel it in, and they have to kind of return. And certainly with the injuries and some of the things that have gone on this season, they were sort of set up to maybe fail in South Bend. I think the loss, the way they lost, was certainly inexcusable, and the coaches will tell you that first and foremost. But you just kind of saw the Washington State loss coming, and you kind of saw the Notre Dame loss coming, you know, just with the injuries and the attrition and sort of how the schedule was setting up. I mean, Notre Dame had a bye week. They had no class that week. I mean, they were setting up to beat USC. They put everything they could into that game. And a lot of teams have been able to do that just because USC hasn't had that bye week and they've had so many injuries. So it's one of those things that, you know, through the long process, USC's been able to win some games. If they can get back to the Pac-12 championship game and win that, that will be huge for them. They are focused more regionally than they are nationally. And so, you know, those kids, there's a lot of kids in Southern California and California in general that want to stay closer to home. And that's a big factor. And that's a factor, win or lose, if you can continue to have some momentum in regards to the direction of your football program. That's always the thing. The kids don't want to get involved with a program that, A, has instability from a coaching staff standpoint, and if you lose a bunch of games, that's always going to be put into question. And B, they want to be part of those games where you are embarrassed and you go out there week in and week out and get slapped around. And that's a bad loss for USC. It's a bad loss for Clay Helton. But it's one of, you know, very few losses in his actual, you know, time as head coach at this point. I think what somebody posted, he was 17-2. I haven't, like, gone through the schedule to do that calculation, but he certainly won a lot more games than he's lost at this point. And so it's still obviously a work in progress, but if kids feel like it's a work in progress towards something positive and they get to stay close to home and they get to go to USC, then it works out for them. So, yeah, in terms of the negative impact, there was some, but probably not as much as fans certainly after the game would have felt. I mean, I think we had quite a few posts about Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to go to Notre Dame now, and we've lost this guy and that guy. And it just, the kids just don't have quite such a knee-jerk reaction, which is interesting because you think at that age they would be very impulsive, but they're less impulsive when it comes to that than a lot of the fan base is.
Certainly are. Well, any other topics before we jump in? We have a lot of questions. You want to jump in there or?
You know, we just put out the November target list, and there was a bunch of, you know, kind of moves in there and wrote a follow-up piece inside the target list, which kind of detailed a little bit of what the thinking was behind the trending and some of the moves from guys being of high interest to medium interest. So check that out. We won't go too much into detail about that. I'm sure questions are going to cover it, so I don't want to rehash things that people, you know, have specific questions about.
Okay. Well, let's start off with a voicemail question for you first. Here we go.
JD from DC with this week's recruiting question for Gerard GM, reviewing this week's target list that was published today. I'm curious, who do you think are the most likely signees at the defensive back positions? And do you think USC feels they need to take at least two safeties and two cornerbacks? As of today, who do you think would be the four guys that are most likely to sign with USC?
Two cornerbacks for sure, because we talked about the last class. We're still waiting to see what Jakari Godfrey can do and whether, you know, he's going to be a guy that's going to be a developmental player that, you know, USC redshirts and brings along slowly and ends up being a really good player, or he was a little bit of a reach for USC. And still, you know, I think he still battled that knee injury a little bit in fall camp and early in the season, and he looked good in spots and flashes, but consistently just wasn't a guy we saw in there a lot. So there's still a lot of question marks about Jakari Godfrey. Greg Johnson, there's some question marks as well. He's got the shoulder injury. He's out. He played well a little bit, certainly on special teams, but his position and where he projects is still a question. If, you know, cornerback is really the best position for him, perhaps he's a guy that might move to running back next year if Ronald Jones leaves. Perhaps he's a guy that actually moves to safety. He's very versatile. So that, you know, that there's kind of a double-edged sword there. It's good because he can move around. He can find playing time at multiple positions. But then it's bad because sometimes those guys get kind of caught in between positions and they're not a true corner or a true safety, or in his case, out of high school, is really no more as a true running back, probably made more plays there than he did anywhere else on the field for Hawkins High School. So I think for sure you want two cornerbacks. You want two guys that are pure cornerbacks, that are cover cornerbacks. With safety, that's a little more of a question because Isaiah Polamalu now is out and he's going to redshirt, and that kind of gives USC maybe a little more eligibility there at that safety position. It's staggered a little more. This season, I think they definitely planned on playing both Bubba Bolden and Isaiah Polamalu, but with Isaiah Polamalu being injured and now taking that redshirt, it extends his eligibility a little bit, so he's not a guy that you're looking as a three-and-out type guy. So do you need another safety? Do you need two safeties in this class? I don't think you have to have two safeties in this class. Now, you could have two safeties in the class. It's possible. But I think it becomes one of those positions that it's best on the board, and we talked about this before, like with two tight ends, a second or maybe even a third running back, a fifth linebacker, you start to look at those positions as, okay, we've got maybe one or two extra scholarships here. Now we need to see who is the best available, who's the best on the board, and grab him out of that sort of pool of positions that you're looking at. So I think safety could definitely fall into that category. Now we're talking about who USC has a good shot at. Right now, I think Isaac Taylor Stewart is still top on the board. I think that's an interesting guy. Difficult to really know. You know, I would hesitate to say that they lead for him by any kind of significant margin. I think it's still very up in the air. I think USC is in a good position for him. He was at the game last weekend. He's, you know, been in great contact with USC. I think, you know, that's one guy that Ronnie Bradford, the defensive back coach at USC, has really sort of targeted early on and has been on early. But I think his recruitment is going to be interesting, and I don't want to say that, you know, USC has any kind of significant lead for him or have positioned themselves that, you know, he's USC's to lose. But that's definitely a guy that you would sort of say, okay, Isaac Taylor Stewart is a guy they really want and has a lot of interest in USC. The other guy is going to be Julius Irvin, and Julius Irvin is a great example of a guy that a lot of people would assume, oh, he's going to Notre Dame, because Notre Dame was high on his list along with Washington. USC was there battling, but you know, early on in his recruitment, I think they were sort of the third team. And then they kind of made a really good move, I think, kind of over the summer when they had him at the elite camp. And early on in August and September, they really sort of made a push. And then he took an unofficial visit there to USC. I think it was for the Utah game. And then followed it up on a Sunday with his parents and took a tour of the classes and took a tour of the facilities and really got a little more hands-on. I think that was Eric Ziskin and Alex Rios who did a great job just taking him on the tour. And then he got to sit down a little bit with the coaching staff and have a little more of an understanding of, you know, where they wanted him as a position. He's a guy, though, is playing safety right now, but projects and wants to play cornerback in college. And so that's a guy that, you know, 6'1", 180 pounds. I've watched him. He's got, you know, some NFL pedigree. His dad, Leroy, played for the Rams, played for a number of teams in the NFL as a cornerback. There's definitely a lot of upside to him. I mean, I watched him, and even as a safety, I watched him play against American Fork, which is a team from Utah earlier in the season. And we go and we see a lot of safeties, a lot of kids in high school that play safety, and they kind of float a little bit, and there's a lot of times where they don't make a big impact on the game unless they're near the line of scrimmage and it's, you know, against a run team, and they can kind of knife in and make a lot of run stops. But Julius Irvin against a team that was pretty balanced made a lot of plays all over the field, man. He was making plays in the run game. He made a lot of plays in the passing game. He really impressed me just with his awareness and his quickness and just instincts. He was there around a lot of plays and also made a big play as a punt returner, ended up getting a touchdown there. So, yeah, he's a guy that's, I think, definitely risen on USC's list, and they've definitely circled in on him. And that would be sort of the second corner, I think, if they had their choice. And I think now, through it all, I think USC is actually the leader for him and probably the school to beat for him. He still has an official visit to Washington coming, and so that's going to be interesting. Washington was actually the first school to start recruiting him as a cornerback, and so they kind of got a little bit of a lead there. But USC, I think, has reeled them in, and I think playing close to home, I think there's a lot going for USC at this point. Obviously, they want to finish the season strong, and if they end up playing Washington in the Pac-12 championship game, you know, that could have a little bit of sway if he's on the fence. I mean, obviously you don't want to one of those situations where USC goes in like they did against Notre Dame and they get whooped. Okay, that's an issue. You can't do that. But I think that USC is in a pretty good position for him. I think a better position for him than they actually are for Isaac Taylor Stewart right now. But both of those guys, I think that they're doing well with. I think for safety, That's harder, and that's more open-ended. Like I said, I don't know if they need to. I think the one guy that they're doing very well with, from everything I hear, and they've certainly built up a lot of momentum, has been Tolanoa Hufanga, who is the 6'1", 195-pound athlete, four-star. He's actually rated a five-star by Scout from Corvallis, Oregon, a guy that, you know, a lot of people said was heading to Oregon. They thought Oregon was the leader, and that talk kind of started diminishing over the summer, and then by the time we get into September, we start to hear that USC's made a big run for Hufanga. You know, that's Johnny Nansen going up there to the Northwest. You know, he obviously got Marlon Toipolotu. I think he's making a big move there with Hufanga, and I think USC right now, from all account is really the team to beat for him. Now, that's a guy that could definitely play safety. A lot of people kind of make that Troy Polamalu comparison. But he's also a guy that can play running back as well. He's actually a very, very good running back. So we'll kind of see, you know, where he projects with USC, if they just continue to bring him in as an athlete, or he favors one side or the other of the football. But that would obviously be a huge get. And that might be a guy that you say, okay, if we can get him, we only need one safety in this class. The only other guy that really comes up in the safety position that USC has a shot at, that is kind of a national guy at this point and a guy that I think would be at the top of the list, would be Jaden Woodbey. And Jaden Woodbey is committed to Ohio State. He says he's solidly committed to Ohio State, but, I mean, his mom and dad went to USC. His dad played for USC. There's a lot of legacy there for him, and we'll see, you know, as we get into January. He's already taken his official visit to Ohio State. I think he probably will end up taking an official visit to USC in late January, so we'll see what happens with that. But that's another guy that's definitely in the mix. And so all the other names, they're just names right now. I think those two are sort of the names of safety, and like I said, I don't know that you actually need two guys at that position.
All right, let's, before we jump into the rest of the questions, we also had, I think we got a couple of tweets, and some people are asking about some of the UCLA decommits. Any thoughts on those? Any chance USC could jump in on some guys that have decommitted from UCLA recently? They've had like a rash of them.
Yeah, and that's one of those situations where it's an accumulative effect. It's not just one game or two games that UCLA has lost. It's just the season and the direction of the football program in general. And certainly, I don't anticipate Jim Moore being fired at the end of the year. I think, you know, it was more of him maybe leaving. And there's always that potential. He could just resign and decide, I'm going to go back to the NFL Network. I'm done with this. I'm going to go to the Pac-12 Network, be a TV analyst, and not deal with the issues at the football program. But certainly the direction of the program is not well. It's a bit of a dumpster fire. And in that case, when you get beat, and you get beat badly by a bunch of different teams, you know, kids don't want to be associated with that. They don't want to be associated with losers, and they don't want to be associated with a downtrodden program. And so that's kind of where UCLA is right now. In terms of the guys that they've had decommit, no, not really. I don't think USC is really interested in a bunch of those guys. I think there's a guys that are committed right now that USC is still looking at. And, of course, Elijah Griffin comes to the top of the list, cornerback from Mission Viejo, 6 foot, 170 pounds, a guy that, you know, I thought would probably end up at USC after it was all said and done, but committed to UCLA. I think that's a guy that USC definitely likes. He has a lot of ties to USC. It's just going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out with some of these other guys that USC is recruiting. I mean, like I said, you know, Julius Erving is there, Isaac Taylor Stewart. Maybe Elijah Griffin could be a guy that's a backup for Isaac Taylor Stewart if that falls through for USC. So that's a guy to look at. USC offered just a few weeks ago Abdul Malik McLean, defensive end, 6'4", 230 pounds, from J. Sarah High School, which is in San Juan Capistrano. McLean is sort of that predator position type guy, a little stiff in the hips when we saw him in the offseason, but a guy that's made a lot of plays and been pretty good for J. Sarah this year, and perhaps maybe a guy that you actually build up and becomes a guy that plays defensive end in USC system, meaning he's a down lineman instead of being actual predator type guy. I wouldn't necessarily count that out. I think, you know, on the West Coast, I've talked about this before. There are a lot of guys that, you know, they come in at 240, come in at 250, and you put the weight on them. It's not like the South where they come in 80, 285, and that's, you know, they're going to get bigger from there. Sometimes you got to build these guys up a little bit. So with McLean, he's an interesting kid. He's an interesting prospect. I think USC looks at him, has to be more of a plan B at this point with some of the other guys that they're recruiting and guys they have committed. But another guy to watch, because he is still committed to UCLA right now, and USC has offered him. Matthew Tago is one last guy that, again, I think would be more of a backup plan for USC, but 6'3", 230, linebacker / quarterback. USC obviously not looking at him as a quarterback. They see him as a linebacker and a guy that, you know, they offered over the summer. Has pretty good film. He's a pretty good-looking football player, but again, I think a guy that, when you look at what USC has on the recruiting board, the options they have, I think he would be more of a fallback plan. So in terms of their class, I think it's more of what UCLA has right now that USC could be looking at. And obviously, you know, Dorian Thompson-Robinson is another guy that you could mention that USC might take a look at, 6'2", 195-pound, a quarterback from Bishop Gorman High School. I know a lot of USC fans would like USC to recruit him maybe harder and look at him more. The quarterback position is hard to figure out at USC right now. I mean, certainly with Justin Fields moving on and committing to Georgia, I think he's off the table. They're still kind of making their attempts to get Jack Tuttle on campus. They have brought in Tanner McKee a little bit and had him on an unofficial visit, but that seems like a long shot with him going on a Mormon mission for 2 years out of high school. I mean, they kind of need to plug and play there with somebody if Darnold leaves, and that's not going to really do it. So, you start to think more about grad transfers and that maybe being the solution there if Sam Darnold decides to leave early for the NFL. That's kind of a bit, murky right now as to what's going to go on, because we haven't seen too many offers go out and we haven't seen a lot of recruiting at that position for USC.
Okay, we got a question from Paul. He said, first, let me say, Ryan, I appreciate all the work you and your team put into making USCFootball.com the best site out there for USC football news. Thank you, Paul, for that. My question is for Gerard. What is the reason USC hasn't convinced more recruits into official visits? Other major programs across the country have three or four times the amount of visits scheduled. I know USC typically likes to bring in recruits after the season, so should we expect the visits to kind of increase over season's end. One of the major selling points for USC is its location, so getting out-of-state recruits to Los Angeles may sway their decisions in hotly contested recruiting battles. Look forward to hearing your response. Fight on, from Paul.
USC has always kind of left the recruiting process more towards the postseason than during the season. That really started to happen, I think, about midway through Pete Carroll's era, and they really sort of focused on having the kids come in, I think, after the season for two reasons. One reason being that the coaching staff wanted to focus more on the team, and they had a lot of team meetings, they had a lot of things going on, and when you're trying to juggle official visits, tours, and meeting with parents, you're not meeting with your own players and focused on the game plan and the game that's actually being played that Saturday. The second reason, probably being even more of a reason, and I think a bigger factor, is just the atmosphere at USC. USC's game atmosphere is okay. And I know USC fans probably don't want to hear that, but it's just okay. It's not amazing unless it's that kind of huge game that you can really pull in a full crowd. You've got sort of that L.A. blasé sort of atmosphere, and people show up late, and there's a lot of seats that are open. And when you're comparing that with Gainesville or Knoxville or even South Bend, where everything is about football on that Saturday, so those schools want to showcase what's happening on Saturday. Sunday, not so much. Friday, yeah, you got some pep rallies and stuff like that, but there's not a whole lot going on in Gainesville, Knoxville, South Bend, Columbus, Ohio, etc., during the week. And USC, I think, is more of, hey, that's all fine, but we're not trying to compare football atmospheres. What we're trying to compare is life as a student athlete here versus other places, and showcasing Los Angeles, the weather, the city, the conveniences, everything that you have in Los Angeles, and that takes place more when you're after the season and not everything is about what is happening on Saturday during a football game. And so that's always been the strategy, and I think it's probably been the right strategy, because there are games during the season that, let's face it, USC goes and they play a team that they're going to whoop, and they're playing them at home. That stadium at this point in time is not going to be filled. Now, maybe if you're on the run that Pete Carroll was on, and you're killing people, and the fans just, you start to get the sort of passive, I just want to be attached with the winner type L.A. carpetbagger sports fan, then, yeah, you might be able to get sellouts. But at this point in time, you're not getting sellouts at those games. You're getting, 70,000, 60,000 people at a game, a bunch of empty seats, no atmosphere. It's great to showcase your team whooping on Oregon State or whoever else it is that's a patsy that comes in and you want to showcase how you play football-wise, but the atmosphere itself is lacking. So you don't really want to showcase that if you're a coaching staff. You want to showcase, hey, but this is L.A., and this is what we can do, and it's not all just about football. Football is a big part of it. We go out, we win games, et cetera, et cetera. But you also are going to live here, and you may want to live here after football, after school. And how many different college towns can you say that about? Do you want to graduate from Texas A&M and then come back and live in College Station? No. And South Bend, no. I mean, you know, how many of those football players are like, man, I just want to graduate, get a great job so I can come back and live in South Bend. That's not factual. That's not how it happens. Nobody wants to do that. So with Los Angeles, that's why they're trying to emphasize, look, at you know, there's the football aspect, but there's also the aspect of actually living here as a student athlete. And I think that they can focus on more after the season. And certainly when it's 86 degrees in January, it just emphasizes, hey, you know what, you want to live here. More than just football, you want to actually live here.
Let's go to Paul in Vegas. He said, when reading the latest injury report from the team, I was struck by the sheer number of incapacitated players. The wear and tear of a long...
Incapacitated, okay.
Yeah.
I like that.
Not capacitated.
I like that. That's an interesting way to phrase it.
Yeah. Not like we're talking about capitation here. The wear and tear of a long season really becomes apparent at the end of the season. So the question for Gerard is, do the recruiting coaches hammer the injury reality home to hotshot recruits who have early playing time as a requirement in choosing a team? Thanks, Paul in Vegas.
Yeah, some coaches more than others. But, I mean, I think every coaching staff has to always point that out. You're one snap away from playing, and that's a big deal. And so, you know, how much it actually gets through to the kids, you know, how much they really take that into account that, you know what, I could be playing with one snap and be on the field and I don't have to actually wait. I don't know, because they are all looking at depth charts, and we talked about this before, how much playing time is a factor, and playing time early is a factor for a lot of these kids. They think that they're ready to come out, make an impact. They want to be three and done. They want to get on the three-year plan in the NFL, and so playing as a true freshman is a big deal for them. And so, I mean, the injury aspect is always there, and obviously USC, we've seen plenty of injuries where guys that we didn't expect to be able to be thrown in the lineup are having to play, and coaches do hammer that home. But even if there weren't a lot of injuries, you hammer that home. You're recruiting a top quarterback, and you say, look, yeah, we got a guy coming back. We really like him. He's going to be a guy that, you know, could be a Heisman Trophy candidate. He could be a guy that goes to the NFL. But more than anything, you know, it's only going to take one play where he gets knocked out of the game, and then you're going to have a shot if you, you know, do everything that you're supposed to do and you compete and you play hard in practice. And so that's always brought up. It's not anything, I think, significantly new just because USC has had a bunch of injuries this year. That is just something you can point to with an actual example. You can say, look, this is what happened this year. Next year, you could be in the same position as a true freshman that just came in and has made an impact for us.
All right, we got one from Bearsecutor, Gerard. He said, would you agree USC seems to be in pretty good shape right now for 2018 defensive class? And if we win the Pac-12 and we can close on most of the guys we need to round out a great balanced defensive class that fits all of our needs, especially quarterback and linebacker. What do you think, Bearsecutor?
Yeah, you know, certainly finish out with a great class. They had a very good class last year, and they obviously finished extremely strong, especially up front defensively, and they're doing well again. I mean, they've got some good options at defensive tackle, especially considering the defensive tackle class they signed last year. Linebacker is going to be strong. I think you really, really have to strike out not to have a good linebacker class, because they've got probably about eight guys right now that they're involved with that, you know, could all make up a very solid linebacker class. It could go from being, you know, a B, B plus to being maybe the best linebacker core in the country for 2018. So certainly they can definitely be very good. It's a little thinner at cornerback in terms of options. You know, we kind of have to see what's going on. We talked a little bit about, I guess, the two guys that I would perceive at the top of the list, you know, in terms of guys that USC wants, and Isaac Taylor Stewart, Julius Irvin, but they'll have, you know, the possibility of getting involved with Elijah Griffin. Chase Williams is still floating around out there. He's committed to Nebraska, but I think USC would be in a good position to be able to steal him away from Nebraska, certainly. You don't have a lot in terms of national names, I think, at defensive back, and that's what USC is kind of used to in the days where they always sort of had a guy from Florida, from Georgia floating around out there. And it's not to say they might not get a visit from one of those guys, but I think just in terms of the focus, and rightly so, they're looking closer to home and they're more focused on the guys that are closer and knowing that distance is not going to be a factor for them. And I think that's sort of a weight off your shoulders as a coach when you're recruiting. you know, that last bit of push when you have in-home visits and you sit down and you're looking eye to eye with mama and you get that feeling in your gut, yeah, I don't think this kid's going to be able to leave. Maybe he could leave, but mama isn't going to let him leave. And then, you know, you spun your wheels all that time and your chicken's going to come up a little bit short. And that happens a lot. So when you're recruiting a guy like Isaiah Taylor Stewart from San Diego, Julius Irvin, who's there from Anaheim, you know, neither of those guys you have, you know, really anything to worry about in that regard. So, you know, Noel Boykin is a guy that is from the East Coast that USC's looking at that will officially visit USC for the UCLA game. He's coming in with Michael Salawuddin, who is the running back that's committed to USC, teammates at Woodson High School in Washington, D.C. You know, Noah Boykin being committed to Maryland, you know, it's going to be sort of a little bit of a, you know, how much can he leave home and how interested can he be in USC? Obviously, with Salawuddin committed to USC, he would have a teammate already, and I'm not sure how close they are. If they're taking the visit together, they have to be somewhat close. But so that's another option that is kind of a wait and see. You know, it's a little bit exploratory just to see how the visit goes and being away from home, et cetera. But, I mean, that's a guy that's 6'2", 170 pounds that kind of fits what USC's looking at as a defensive back as well. And so, you know, I mean, could it be one of those things where they actually, you know, make corner into one of those positions where you look at two, maybe three guys and then figure out safety a little later if Hufanga comes in as a running back or ends up, you know, going to Washington or somewhere else at the last minute? That's the question to me, is sort of how does the defensive back position pan out with the options, which are a little fewer, but they are local. So it's sort of a, you know, there's less options, but they're more likely options, I guess you could say. So there's a good and bad there to the defensive back recruiting. And then defensive tackle, sort of, are you able to just hit with a couple of those guys that you really want? You know, Trevor Trout's a guy that's going to be coming in for the UCLA game, 6'3", 315-pound defensive lineman. And then you've got, I think, Michael Thompson is also coming in for that UCLA game, who's 6'4", 290. He could actually play probably a little defensive end. Saw him play at the opening, and you get to see at the opening finals them going full pads. And he was pretty impressive. It's not a great defensive line class, but he was one of the better guys that flashed a little bit of quickness. And I think really overall, if there's a theme with this defensive line class, and what Kenichi Odizi is really trying to get out of it is pass rushing. And one of those things being that there's a potential Rasheem Green leaves early for the NFL. But then also the bodies they got last year, I think you want to follow up with some guys who can get upfield and are not just going to be a run stop, you know, gap fillers. And so they're kind of recruiting guys that are quick and can get upfield and make some plays. I think with Tuli Lagasanoa, he's a guy that's a little more of a run stopper, a little closer to being like Marlon Tuipulotu. So I think if they want to follow up that commitment, they're trying to maybe get some guys that can move upfield a little bit and have a little more athleticism. I think that's why Tommy Togiai is a guy that they're not really recruiting that hard, a guy that's kind of fallen down the board a bit. Looking at the target list, you know, he's now trending down and he's only got medium interest, where I think, you know, over the summer, USC was a school to beat. Now Ohio State's involved with them. They love him. I think USC's got guys that are like that body type already on the roster, so they want to move forward with some guys that maybe can do something a little different, and I think that difference is pass rushing.
Let's go to Brian in Baldwin Hills. He said, we often hear about the Reggie Bush effect when it comes to USC recruiting, from players like Joe McKnight to Dory Jackson. We've all remarked how Reggie Bush and his time at USC played a factor in them ultimately choosing to attend USC. My question is twofold. How do you think the Reggie Bush effect has impacted USC recruiting over the last 10 years, and how much longer do you think it will last?
Ooh, that's a tough question. That's, you know, I don't know how you can really quantify, you know, how much it's impacted. I think significantly, because there's so many players and recruits that have mentioned watching Reggie Bush and know USC from the Reggie Bush era. Now, I don't know how much of that is Reggie Bush, and how much that is just he is representatory of the success that USC had. He is sort of emblematic of the run that they made. But, you know, it's interesting because it really always is Reggie Bush and then maybe Matt Leinart and then maybe Dwayne Jarrett. And with Reggie Bush, there have been guys that have, you know, played college football who have been centerpieces of very successful programs that just don't get the mention that he has. I mean, Percy Harvin is a good example of a guy that, you know, was really supposed to be the heir apparent to Reggie Bush when USC was recruiting him, ended up going to Florida and made great plays at Florida, and was a guy that didn't get the ball probably as much as Reggie because he wasn't just a pure running back, but he did play out of the offensive backfield a bit. He played in the slot. He was there with Tim Tebow, and you just hear very little about him from recruits the way you do Reggie Bush, and sort of always kind of attaching Reggie Bush with USC. And at this point, how long will it go on? That's hard to say. I mean, the kids that are coming out of high school now are probably, what, like 5 years old, 6 years old when they were watching Reggie Bush. So we're coming up on classes here, 2020, 21, where these kids were, you know, infants. They weren't really watching Reggie Bush. You know, they may know of Reggie Bush. They really weren't watching Reggie Bush. And even I think the kids now coming up are not really that familiar with Reggie Bush other than maybe, you know, his reputation. I think, again, some of it is emblematic just of the success that USC had and, you know, Pete Carroll runs. And you know, they don't maybe mention Pete Carroll, but that was sort of what USC was about and sort of took his personality. And Reggie Bush was just the highlights that went along with that. Reggie Bush was making those plays and doing those amazing things. And so people always attach Reggie Bush to the success, but maybe it's the success as much as anything that they really are sort of, you know, attributing their interest to USC or what they know about USC.
Yeah, I think it's big impact, but it's hard to quantify. But it probably is going away. But people still go and watch those kind of things on YouTube and stuff. Matt from OC says, USC's lack of a good defensive tackle depth has shown up this year. With the loss of Josh Fatu at the end of the year, it only is going to get worse. Outside linebacker Latui Gasanoa, are the Trojans going outside of him, are the Trojans going after anybody hard, and can they afford to get more developmental inside the defensive line? Matt from the OC.
They can afford to go after guys that are a little more developmental, excuse me. I don't think that's ever a bad thing. I think on the, you know, the West Coast, and I mentioned this before, I think you have to. You can't just depend on getting 300-pound guys out of high school and say, okay, that's what I'm recruiting. Is that guy 300 pounds? He's not. Okay, I'm not recruiting him. No. Christian Rector is a perfect example. And it's just amazing that he's actually become the example. Like, I used him as an example when he was sitting on the bench and saying, yeah, I think Christian Rector should get more reps. And, you know, he becomes this really good player this year that was actually like a playmaker and an impact player for USC. That's the guy that you're really recruiting 9 times out of 10. Now, you know, you may be able to get other guys. You may be able to go nationally and pluck a guy from, you know, the east of the Mississippi and go into the South. But I think you really have to project, and you have to find guys that you can develop that are 250, 260 pounds, put weight on them, and get them a redshirt, and then bring them out when they're sophomores, redshirt sophomores, and see what they can do. I think that's definitely got to be part of the blueprint for USC, and I think part of the blueprint for any West Coast school. It's just the way it goes out here. These kids are not 320 pounds coming out of high school normally. That's just not what you're going to get. Now, specifically with USC, and we talked about this just a little bit ago with the last question in terms of how the defensive class will shore up, they do have a shot at a couple guys nationally, Michael Thompson and Trevor Trout. We talked about them both being from St. Louis. Interesting, USC's kind of going into St. Louis. They haven't had a whole lot of luck recruiting that area. I mean, the last time I think they were in Missouri really recruiting, the last guy I can remember was Sheldon Richardson, who was a defensive end, defensive tackle, who committed to Missouri out of high school, was a five-star guy, but didn't make the grades and ended up having going to College of Sequoias. So he goes to College of Sequoias, he takes an official visit to USC, commits on his official visit. I know he committed because one of the coaches came out of the locker room and said, hey, Sheldon Richardson commit. So I texted him, called him, he kind of sort of basically said, yeah, I did commit, but I don't want anything out. And the longer it went before he put anything out, the more I knew he's not going to go public, and this is going to end up being back in Missouri's lap, and he, you know, he'll, and Missouri coaches will get a hold of him, and his mom and dad will probably get a hold of him when he gets back home for the holidays. and he's going to end up at Missouri, and sure enough, he ended up in Missouri. So, I mean, that's the last time I really remember USC being in that area really recruiting hard, and here they have two defensive tackles that they're going to bring in officially for the UCLA game. So we'll see what happens with those guys. I mean, they're both very good players. They have good tape, and like I said, they're big guys who can pass rush, and I think pass rushing is sort of the key with this class. I mean, USC is also looking at Tariq Smith still. He's definitely... I was going to say he's trending down. A lot of people think he's headed to Penn State. That's been sort of a call from a lot of people for a while now. I think that that's not a bad call. I just think there's maybe a possibility there that he comes back out here for the holidays again and unofficially visits USC. He's already unofficially visited once. He officially visited in September. And so there's a possibility he comes back out here because he's got so much family out here. And if he comes back out here in January, you know, then you go, okay, that might be something going on there with USC, and they may be able to steal him. So I'm not ready to sort of cast him aside and pencil him in for Penn State or even Ohio State at this point. USC did just offer Caleb Tremblay, who's a JUCO defensive end, 6'5", 275, from American River up there in Sacramento. USC sort of late to the party on him, Alabama. There's a few other schools. I think Washington's on him. So we'll see if USC can get an official visit with him. But that's sort of a plug-and-play player that you look at. Obviously, with Rasheem Green possibly leaving, that's where you would see a guy like Caleb Tremblay coming in. Ronnie Perkins, there's still a possibility he could visit officially. He committed to Oklahoma there in October, late October. 6'3", 255, another guy is a pass rusher. And Jeremiah Martin is another guy that USC is continuing to recruit. I think they're sort of trending down with him because I don't think they're recruiting him as hard as some other schools. But 6'4", 240, 245, another defensive end that while he plays sort of a stand-up defensive end position in high school, I think USC would put him put some weight on him and put his hand down and make him a standard inside interior defensive end in their 2-4-5/3-4 defense that they're running.
All right, let's go to Mike in Quartz Hill. He said, looking over the offensive lineman targets, you have Penei Sewell trending down and Trey Hill trending up. Looking at their video, it's difficult to get much. Both seem like they need to lose a lot of weight. Sewell's playing against very inferior talent. Hill seems to have slow feet, and he was manhandled several times at the opening. Can you elaborate on the situation? Mike.
Yeah, with Sewell, I mean, we saw him have a very sort of Nike camp in Los Angeles, and then he went up to the Nike camp in Oakland we were in Santa Rosa. I don't know where the heck, we can't even remember where we were, but it wasn't close to Oakland. Our 45-minute drive from Oakland. And he was really good there. I mean, he dominated that. Now, that was a camp that was not very deep in talent. In fact, it was one of the shallowest camps in terms of talent, if I can use that as a word to describe the lack of talent that was at that Oakland Nike camp. So that wasn't necessarily a big deal, but he did go to the opening finals and actually was really good. He was probably one of the best guards there. And so that was something that, you know, kind of surprised me how well he played there. A guy that's, you know, I definitely got some time to work on technique, and he's got a lot of upside in that regard. And so I think there's, you know, plenty of potential with Penei Sewell, and that's something that I think a lot of the schools that are recruiting really like about him. Trey Hill, yeah, a little more of a finished product, a little more of a straightforward man-blocking road grader. A guy that does want to officially visit USC, that's probably going to happen in January. If he doesn't end up committing somewhere earlier, you never know. It's tough to read with those kids. And USC sort of on the outside looking in. I mean, he's got medium interest. They are trending up because he does want to officially visit. But you've got Georgia, who's playing lights out locally, and Kirby Smart certainly knows how to recruit. They're going to have a mega class. And so, you do look at them being kind of a team to beat. Auburn's on him. Those kind of kids are really difficult to get away from the South. And so I wouldn't give USC any kind of great chances with Trey Hill. It's just a guy that, you know, wants to visit, and maybe something happens to get some traction on his visit. I think with Penei Sewell, you certainly have more going on with him. But Alabama made a big push. He has not had the communication with USC that we would expect right now. And it kind of makes me wonder. You know, I mean, he's not talking about taking an official visit to USC. He's been unofficially to USC several times, but USC definitely wants to get an official visit, and that hasn't necessarily been set up. It's been a little lack of communication there, and that's kind of the reason why he's been trending down for the past couple months. So we'll see. I mean, USC could definitely use some guards. We talked sort of about what was going on there with when you had Voorhees playing tackle and you had Austin Jackson playing tackle, and then you had Elijah Vera Tucker come in and play tackle, and it looked like USC had all these tackles, and then all of a sudden it changed. You know, our projections of Voorhees being more of a guard sort of have come true because now he's playing more guard. He's playing well there. I mean, that's, I think, his position. I think for a Tucker, that's probably going to be his position. And with Austin Jackson, I think he's definitely an offensive tackle. But the question is he a franchise left tackle? Is he the guy out of high school that everybody thought he was? And that's still a question. That remains to be seen. And so now it's not just all about can we get interior guys because – you know, we're going to lose some interior guys. It's now, do we actually have the depth of tackle that we thought we had coming in the fall camp? So now, you know, you may be looking to recruit guys that can play offensive tackle, and I think Penei Sewell for sure is a guard. That is his number one position. That is where his potential lies. And so that may also be part of the reason we're seeing maybe USC is not pressing him as hard and maybe looking at some other guys that could be more offensive tackles.
Let's go to Hugh in Simi Valley. You're rolling right along, Gerard. Good stuff. And great questions, too. Since Florida head coach lost his position, he's talking about Jim McElwain, I'm curious to know if USC has any interest in returning back to recruiting Matt Corral. And if so, does that have any impact on JT Daniel? Also, what's the buzz? Who's likely to replace UCLA head coach Jim Mora, assuming he loses more? There's a huge buyout. Not sure they would go through with it. Hoping Chip Kelly is not interested. And then, that was it from Hugh.
Very doubtful on Corral. I think USC's moved on. It would have a big impact on JT Daniel. The buzz and who would replace Jim Mora, like I said, I don't see Jim Mora getting fired unless he decides to move on himself. I don't see him getting fired. So, talking about who would be interested in that job or who they might go after is sort of arbitrary when I think Mora probably comes back. I mean, I think it was last year or the year before where a lot of people thought he was going to stop coaching at UCLA and he was going to try to get a job somewhere else or he was going to just move on. And I heard that from several people who were pretty plugged in, and he stuck with it. And now he's kind of in the middle of a dumpster fire, and I don't know. I just don't think they're going to fire him. I think he would sort of have to almost walk away from the job for there to be a big change there. I haven't really, you know, done a bunch of research on it and hit up a bunch of UCLA contacts to kind of try to know what's going on. I just, from afar, I just don't see there being any big move there. It's a mess, though, but, you know, the problem is, and this is, you know, partly USC's problem as well, is the administration and the people that are involved with football and the higher up donors and what kind of moves they want to make. And if they're complacent and they're happy with just, hey, you know what? Yeah, you know, it's not great right now, but next year we should be able to win 8-9 games and, you know, that'll pacify people. Then there's not going to be big moves made. And that's sort of that mentality at UCLA has crept in at USC a bit. There's sort of a corporate – it's really, in my mind, and maybe this is a bad comparison, but it's the Clipper mentality. It reminds me of Donald Sterling and sort of how he ran the Clippers. And, you know, they would be a playoff team here, and they'd have Danny Manning and then Charles Smith, and then they'd make a little run, and it'd be like, oh, you know, Clippers might be putting something together. And then he didn't want to invest in the program, and one of those guys would lose. They'd lose those guys to free agency, and then they'd be back where they started. And as long as he was getting the TV contract money and the merchandise money and whatever money they were getting from the sparse crowds that would show up, he was making a profit. And so it was just a matter of investment versus, you know, how much you're actually making out of the product that you're putting on the court, or in this case the field. And if you're still making money off of it, the corporate mentality is the bottom line, and it's like, well, we're making money off of it, what else could we want? And so that's what it comes down to. So, you know, that I think has crept in a little bit with USC and certainly with UCLA. I mean, they got a lot of money from Under Armour is not going to be happy if they're a losing football program, but I mean, how much pressure can Under Armour exert on UCLA, which is a state-run school? Good luck with that. So I don't see Jim Mora, this big push to fire Jim Mora. I mean, I think a lot of people feel like he's turned the football culture there around for the better. What's happened this year, it's hard to explain. I just don't follow the program enough to have any sort of, hey, this is what's going on, this is the issues, these are the symptoms, and here's how to fix it. But I think overall, I just don't see them firing Jim Mora. I think it would have to be more Jim Mora deciding, you know what, it's just not working out for me. I'm going to go do something else.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Tarek with a Q, he says, do you think Clancy Pendergast's philosophy of playing only the best 11 with little substitutions will hurt recruiting? I've noticed that Bama substitutes often when they have depth. This allows for the program to develop its talent, and five-star recruits don't mind signing there because they know they'll see the field. A couple of years ago, I watched them sub out the entire defensive line constantly during games. That's from Tarek with a Q.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of chicken and an egg there because you say, well, it's Alabama, and they've got lots of depth, and they've got lots of good players, and they could do that. But USC's got some depth, and I've been disappointed in the lack of rotation, especially on the defensive line with some of the younger guys. You got to get those guys some playing time. I mean, USC was very reluctant to put in Christian Rector. Christian Rector only got in there because of injuries to other guys, namely Rasheen Green, and obviously you had Toi Polotu go down. And lo and behold, the guy can play football. Oh, who would have guessed? He's actually okay. You got to put those guys in there and give them some run. And I think it does hurt recruiting to some extent. And they'll say, oh, you know, we played 15 true freshmen this year, and they almost have like a quota of true freshmen. But a lot of those guys are doing special team stuff, and they're not really in there making the impact. And I think that there's certainly potential there where they could at least get some meaningful reps, and they could develop over the year to where at this point in the time you're putting them in there, they're going to actually be able to make some plays. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that they definitely have to. I think the 2-4-5 being a base defense is questionable against some of the teams that they've played against. It certainly hurt them against some of the teams they played against. They've been run on in games. In such a fashion that it makes you just scratch your head while you're not adjusting. They seem to not necessarily get a lot out of their 34, which, again, you know, you're putting an extra defensive tackle in there, another body. You feel that you should be a little better against the run. So there's issues there. There's definitely some holes there and some things that need to be corrected. But I think there is definitely a conservative sort of attitude just in the coaching staff in general in terms of rotation. And certainly with Clancy Pendergast, I think coming from the NFL, you're playing your best 11. You know, even though it's the NFL and everybody's talented, you don't see a lot of rotation in the NFL that way. And he's sort of taken that mentality to college, and I just don't think it's necessarily you're getting the most out of what you have. You got 85 scholarships. You do have some depth there. And more than anything, you've got to find moments where you can develop some guys and get them playing time and get them experience so when they go in there, because somebody's injured and you don't have a choice, they're not wide-eyed and you know, getting the deer in the headlight look.
Tarek with a K says, how many down defensive linemen do you see USC taking in 2018?
Two. It's kind of a hard question to answer because you look at a guy like, you know, maybe Elijah Wade. We talked about Jeremiah Martin. There's guys there that you kind of go, could they end up putting their hand down and playing interior, and maybe they're just being recruited at Predator? That Predator position sort of blurs the lines a little bit as to who's a true sort of linebacker that's just tall and rangy, and who's the guy that actually you can put weight on and put his hand down and be an interior defensive lineman in this kind of 34 variant defense that they run. I say two, but in reality they could take three guys. It's just that third guy would probably be more of a defensive end in high school, a guy that certainly would be more of a weak side guy, maybe that you would play in a 4-3. I think that that's sort of what you're looking at. I think Tui Lagasanoa is obviously a guy they want to keep committed. And then, you know, if you could bring in another guy next to him that's an interior guy, following the great year that you had last cycle, I think that's plenty.
Aaron had a Matt Corral question. We already talked about that. Thanks, Aaron. We also have, let's see, we got Ruben. He said, is USC recruiting any power backs? We have not had a power back since Trey Madden left. I like Michael Saladin, but he's very similar to other backs already on the roster. And does any USC have any chance of getting Marquis Stepp or Tavion Thomas on an official visit at least? That's from Ruben.
You know, Stepp, I think that was one instance where, you know, he's committed to Notre Dame, and you watch Notre Dame run all over USC. Why would you go to USC? I mean, that doesn't make sense. He does have a good relationship, though, with Dylan McCullough. It's from Indianapolis. There's potential there, but I think that's probably a real long shot. Taven Thomas, probably a long shot as well. Long shot to sign for you know, visits. It's sort of a moderate long shot, I guess I would say that. But not guys that I think USC are really focused on, and guys that, you know, that you have to watch closely because there might be something going on with their recruitment. I think both those guys being very unlikely possibilities, that's the reason why USC went out and offered Jeremy Banks, a 6'2", 215-pound running back from Cordova, Tennessee, who, you know, has a few offers, starting to actually pick up a bit here his senior year. Iowa State was one of the first teams kind of on him, but now you got Nebraska involved, UCLA, a few other schools. It sounds like there's likelihood that there could be some more SEC schools actually looking at him. And so that's a guy that kind of answers both your questions. Yes, it's expanding the running back board a bit, and kind of showing you that, yeah, USC's probably not feeling good about some of the bigger backs that they've already offered. Those guys had offers, you know, from late spring over the summer. And also a guy that sort of fills that role as a power back, 215 pounds, 6'2". That's, you know, a guy that I think USC has a very good shot at. And right now, certainly they are the biggest offer that he has. So we'll kind of see how that develops. And that's definitely a guy to watch. And then being a new offer, I would say certainly it's sort of a result, I think, of some of the other recruitment from some of the other running backs that USC is involved with.
All right. Marcel says, since Pete Carroll left, how many recruits have we lost due to the instability in the program? I know Mike Tirico commented on two due to the firing of Steve Sarkisian.
That's impossible to really, I mean, how do you quantify that? How do you say
a lot.
Seven recruits.
I mean,
seven
just recruits. The exactly. Lane Kiffin one alone with the 10-2 followed by 7-6, number one recruiting
class.
Yeah,
Jalen Ramsey and you know, Eddie Vanderdoes. And I mean, they've lost quite a few. I mean, it's certainly coaching stability is a big deal. I think one of the interesting things I saw pop up on 24/7 from Taylor Estes, our friend there at the Longhorn site, she wrote a piece that was basically Tom Herman talking about how he didn't really want to fire anybody from his staff. And then a lot of, you know, Longhorn fans think that the offense is not running real well. There needs to be change of offensive coordinator, play calling, et cetera, which is, hey, sounds really different than at USC, right? But Tom Herman basically doubling down, saying, you know what, I think staff stability and cohesion is huge. And just everybody being on the same page and being with these kids and a player being able to have a coach there for 4 years, you build that trust in it, and it's a big deal. And so, you know, I could see Clay Helton sort of having that same mentality and trying to really, you know, develop stability. Sometimes you don't have a choice. Sometimes you lose a guy like Tim Drevno just because he's a good coach and somebody gives him a chance to have a better job somewhere else. You know, that may happen with T. Martin. Somebody may give him a head coaching opportunity and he leaves, and you really can't do anything about that. But from the standpoint of when you have control over it and you are a head coach and you have those decisions to make, do I fire a guy or keep him? Stability is a big deal, and it's hard to know it from USC's perspective because we've seen so little of it. You know, we haven't seen a lot of coaches that have been there for a long time. T. Martin and Clay Helton have really been the two guys that have been there the longest at USC. But, you know, offensive line coaches, they've gone through them. They've gone through defensive coordinators. So, yeah, it hurts in recruiting because those coaches build relationships up. And if they're good recruiters, certainly it hurts. But it also just hurts on the field to some extent. How much? That's hard to say. You know, it's hard. I'm sure Alabama's had, you know, a handful of coaches that have been there for a very long time. But I know they've gone through coaches as well. You know, and more for guys getting jobs and going other places. You know, guys like Kirby Smart leaving for Georgia to get a head coaching job. They've had a lot of guys leave for those purposes. Mario Cristobal was their offensive line coach. He left. He's now at Oregon because he's an offensive coordinator. So you have a lot of those type of issues, and so it's hard to have a lot of stability with the coaching staff for those reasons. But I think by choice, what Tom Herman is saying, that, you know, if I can keep my guys, I'm going to keep my guys, and basically blocking out what the fans are saying.
We had a couple more from Tarek. Of the linebackers USC is recruiting and has a decent shot at, who are the best pass rushers?
Well, we kind of talked about that a little bit already. I mean, we've kind of gone over that. Now, is he talking about the predator position, or is he just talking about the defensive front in general?
I'm kind of thinking the predator position, but yeah, which we kind of we talked about really already, but so we can move
yeah,
on.
Yeah, and I mean with hybrid ends in terms of best pass rushers, I mean I think Elijah Wade is definitely up there, and that's the guy that USC is definitely recruiting very hard. 6'5", 240. He's a big guy, big, long rangey. We saw him at the USC lineman camp a couple years ago, and then kind of went off the radar in terms of camps. We didn't see him at all last season at Nike camps or anything. But that's a guy that USC is definitely recruiting hard, definitely involved with. We talked about Abdul Malik McLean and getting a scholarship offer and sort of, you know, how he fits into things. He's a pretty good pass rusher, but again, a little stiff in the hips, I think. I think that's potentially a guy that you could maybe move down in the defensive line. Cameron Lotu is a guy they're still sort of involved with. He's committed to Alabama, 6'5", 235 from Salt Lake City, Utah. Good, you know, he was good at the opening. Yeah, I mean, he was okay at the opening. He had up and down kind of days. He had like a good day, and then he had a day where he kind of didn't do anything. I just don't know how head over heels USC is for him. I think they would probably rather have Elijah Wade just by the way that they're recruiting those two guys and the communication. And then you have Bo Calvert, who really I've always felt kind of plays more like a Sam than a Predator. He is a little light. He's about 218, 220. He'll be able to put on more weight and probably get to USC closer to 230. With the more weight, you know, you wonder how different he starts to play. But that's a guy that's really athletic. I mean, he ran the fastest 40 time at the Los Angeles opening of a group of linebackers that was called maybe the best group of linebackers ever at any Nike camp tour. So you got a guy who's running a low 4.6, had a great vert, just extremely athletic. And you think, oh, you know what? I mean, you put him as a pass rusher, you know, that's going to be kind of an interesting position for him. And they're recruiting him as a predator, but I think with that athleticism and just sort of his mentality and sort of his instincts and the way he plays, I kind of feel he's more of a Sam. He reminds me a bit of Dallas Sartz. And Dallas Sartz played safety in high school, but Bo Calvert reminds me more of Dallas Sartz than he does, you know, Porter Gustin or somebody that you would put at that predator position. So I think Elijah Wade's a guy. There's not any amazing, like, I mean, unstoppable type guys that, you know, you look at and you say, oh, wow, you know, those guys are going to be, like, tremendous, you know, pass rushers. I tell you what, I mean, a guy that kind of is probably going to get overlooked, but Hunter Echols was a hell of a pass rusher in high school. He wasn't Jalen Phillips type guy, but in terms of just natural pass rush ability and sort of the instincts and just the natural way of lining up and approaching your pass rush and getting by a guy with multiple moves and just having awareness as to where the quarterback was and how the pocket was shifting. Hunter Echols is a hell of a guy as a pass rusher, and he got injured. He's been out as a true freshman and probably get a medical redshirt out of this year when it's all said and done. But that's a guy that I think if he comes back healthy and is able to come back, I think could be surprising to some people of how good of a pass rusher he is. He's got to get more physical. He's got to be more physical. That's his biggest issue. But in terms of skill, he's got a lot of skill as a pass rusher.
Let's see, Tarek, the other one is, would Amon-Ra St. Brown be Deonte Burnett 2.0, or does he have skills that Burnett does not? Being Deonte Burnett 2.0 is not in any way meant to denigrate Burnett's talent, from Tarek.
I think similar. I think he has a lot of what, you know, we like about Deonte Burnett. A, he catches the ball. He catches contested passes. He can catch, you know, difficult passes. He's a bit more physical than Deonte Burnett. I think that's probably the upside to him. I think I would compare him a lot in a lot of ways to Deonte Burnett. But the one thing that he has over Deonte Burnett is he's just more physical. He's got probably a little more swagger, maybe a little too much swag, but he's going to go out there. He'll run block. And, you know, Deonte Burnett's just slight, and he's just not that guy. You're talking about a kid that's almost 200 pounds compared to Deonte Burnett, who might be pushing 170 at this point, 175. Yeah, he has a lot of that. He has a lot of that. Really good routes, really good hands, really good knowledge of sort of, you know, the zones and sort of how to play away from other routes and how to play away from the zone defenders. And like I said, he just catches the ball. The big thing is, and it gets lost with the receivers, can he catch the ball? Like, don't tell me about how fast and tall he is if he can't catch the ball. And that's been one of the biggest issues with Jalen Hall, and I think his descent down the – well, not the rankings. He's still ranked as a five-star, but certainly on USC's board, he's got great quickness. He's got good speed for his size. He's 6'5". He could jump. But he can't catch the ball. And it's like that's what you need is receiver, right? That's what receiving is. And so with a guy like Amon Ross St. Brown, he catches the football, and he's very physical, and he can catch just about any kind of pass. And I think, you know, the run block aspects and just some of that physicality, maybe catching the ball after the run, he has that over Deontay Burnett.
We got Rick in La Mirada. I love the coverage. I didn't like the hype USC got after last season with so many changes, recruiting up and down. Lost aura was all predictable. Our starters are good, but backups are inexperienced, no subbing. So by the second half, teams are gassed. Injuries this season seems our turn. Okay, so I guess he said it's our turn for injuries. Everyone turning on Darnold as Rosen has ascended. Only a real sophomore with a great line last year as a freshman was premature. I'm not sure what he's saying here. Butterfinger receivers, we're not using the running back talent in the passing offense. I wonder how they're recruiting right now. Any aces? Will this season be seen with problems or future of program? Can USC pull classes and keep commits? Sorry, so long. Just heartbroken. Will JT and Amon-Ra stay or upcoming class could you see bouncing? Thanks, Fight On. Rick and La Mirada. Rick, I want you to proofread your questions a little bit because there's a little choppy in there. But what do you think, Gerard?
The La Mirada Manifesto. I think that's basically, we just answered that question. We talked about Amon-Ra and him coming in. And I guess this question, long story short, is does USC still have a chance at Amon-Ra? And yes, they do. Are they still the leader for Amon-Ra? I kind of think they probably are still. So that answers that question.
Yeah. Thanks for that one. Nick, let's just go. We'll get Nick in Cyprus. Why hasn't USC been able to recruit and develop five-star offensive linemen? And who are some five-star offensive linemen who can be great, like Matt Khalil or Tyron Smith? Those were Pete Carroll guys. The trenches is where you win championships, not the pretty boy running backs, quarterbacks, and wide receivers. Fight on. Nick in Cyprus.
Well... Tyron Smith and Matt Khalil were sort of generational players, and we saw that even coming out of high school. It was like, yeah, these two guys are really good, and if USC is able to get both of them, they're going to have two really good offensive tackles for, you know, 4 years, basically, because they're both capable of maybe playing 4 years. Now, Tyron Smith had some weight to put on him. He was about 260 coming out of high school, and really at USC only got to be about 280, 285. It was when he got to the NFL that he got on a decent nutrition program because USC's nutrition program was so lacking. You know, now he's a left tackle and an all-pro type guy for the NFL, for the Cowboys. And Matt Khalil's kind of bounced around a little bit. I think he's with Carolina now with his brother. He started off really well and looked good with Minnesota, but has kind of not been quite as good here in recent years. But still, obviously, at USC, guys that were five stars coming in and guys that were basically five stars or the equivalent coming out. Right now, USC only has two guys on the roster on the offensive line that were five stars in high school, Chuma Adoga, and let me think, who was the other guy that's a five-star coming out of high school that's on the roster right
Jackson.
Now? Austin Jackson, yeah, just last year, I think, was a five-star. So, I mean... You know, you're not going to get a lot of five stars, first and foremost. That's one thing on the offensive line. The second thing is, how do you develop them once you get in the program? We talked a little bit about Austin Jackson and whether he's going to be a guy that's going to play to five-star ability. Is he an actual franchise left tackle? I'm not saying he's not going to be, but we don't know that he's going to be for sure yet. Okay, let's just say it that way. Now, in recent years, kind of looking down the line, how many five-star guys has USC recruited on the offensive line? Not a lot. Zach Banner might have been a five-star guy. Certainly Chad Wheeler was not. Chad Wheeler was a three-star and developed. And now look at where Chad Wheeler is in the NFL. I mean, he's got a spot with the Giants. Zach Banner, I don't think, made a spot. I know he got drafted by Indianapolis very late, but I don't know that he's actually on the roster, if he's even on the practice squad roster. So, you know, it's about development. is, I guess, the key here. Five stars are nice, and it's great when you can get a Matt Khalil and a Tyron Smith, but like I said, those you're not going to get those guys in a single class very often. USC got a good group of offensive linemen. I think, you know, this also sort of ties into the question about stability, the amount of offensive line coaches they've had, Tim Drevno, Bill Connolly, and now you've got Neil Callaway. And a lot of people want you, Clay Helton, to move away from Neil Callaway, feel like he's not doing a good enough job, you know. But then you're bringing in another offensive line coach, and it's one of those things that the cohesiveness and lingo, and then those offensive linemen tend to kind of speak their own language. I think, you know, Pat Rhule certainly was a really good offensive line coach. I mean, those guys liked Pat Rhule. Pat Rhule had a really good sense about offensive line. He knew a lot. Like I said, I mean, they could speak another language with their calls and everything. And he was there for a long time. You know, he was there, came in after Tim Davis had moved on, and he fit really well with what Pete Carroll wanted to do and how they wanted to do things, and was a guy that knew adjustments. He'd been around in the NFL for a long time. And so, you know, he just fit perfectly in there. Is Neil Callaway that guy for Clay Helton? He's obviously been friends with Clay's dad, who was an offensive line coach. And so, you know, you see he's been around a long time. Is it just one of those things that, you know, he has to sort of get his guys in the system and he has to get everybody buying in the way he wants to coach? I don't know. But there's definitely something to be said for the cohesiveness and the stability of having a coach that's been there for a long time. I don't think Bill Connolly was the right pick for USC ever. I think that was a huge mistake by Steve Sarkisian. And cohesiveness or no cohesiveness, I don't think he was going to work out for USC to be successful running the football. But I think with Callaway, I think there's more promise there because he's been around. He's done it before. The guy was a head coach at one point, so he's obviously been successful as a position coach. I think it's, you know, just a matter of whether he fits and whether, you know, USC fans have the patience for him to develop guys the way he wants to develop them. Because let's be fair, I mean, he really doesn't. And none of these guys that have been starters are really his guys. Those guys are to come, and so we're going to see, you know, how he recruits and then how he develops those guys that he does recruit. A guy like Liam Douglas, who USC took when didn't have a lot of offers, he's 265. You know, we're going to see, is he going to end up being a really good player for USC? If he is, if he's a Chad Wheeler type of guy, you know, people will look at they'll look at Neil Callaway a different way, maybe.
Yeah, we'll see. We got a couple more. We'll let you go. Noel says, so did the quote-unquote shitstorm in South Bend doom USC's chances of Amon-Ra St. Brown? So we already talked about that, right?
Yeah. Nine. I was saying in German, so yeah. we covered the demographics.
So thanks for that one. And then Gmart Live, is USC still actively recruiting Merlin Robinson? Do you see USC taking five linebackers in this class? That's from Epic Rubin.
Epic Rubin, you should play some Xbox, man. Gmart Live, that's my gamer tag. Not really. He's kind of, I would say at this point, more of a plan C. USC hasn't really been recruiting him very much since the summer, since kind of late spring. I think that bodes well sort of for the linebacker position and sort of the guys that they are involved with. When you can kind of look past a guy like Merlin Robinson, who's pretty good player, 6'3", 240, runs well. He's a good player. He's a good athlete, but USC just not, they're just not into him for I think some of it is off the field issues and some other things going on. But that's a pretty good talent to pass up. Again, I think it speaks to how well they may be doing at the position with their other options.
All right. Well, Gerard, great stuff. We got through a ton of questions. How long we go here? Ah, hour and 15 minutes, not too bad.
It felt like a lot of questions, though.
It was. And I didn't even say go rapid fire. We got through them all, so that was good.
We got through them all. Well, you know, when it's premium, we are more apt to take our time. I think we've run longer, but, you know, this is for the hardcore fans. These are the people that are not the wishy-washy, I just want to watch the SportsCenter highlights of recruiting. I want to know what's really going on. I want Gerard to explain what the hell is going on in detail. So the people that listen to this podcast are probably, they can't get enough of it.
No, that's, you're exactly right. That's the demographic here. Because we, you know, our other podcasts are general. We have a lot of people that they'll listen and they're not even like on the website all that much. These are the people, if you're listening, you're on the Peristyle, you're asking Gerard questions. You want to know what's going on with recruiting. So no one does it better. So thanks again, Gerard.
Thank you for having me, and we're probably going to talk more consistently here moving forward.
Yeah, I would think so. All right, well, that's Gerard Martinez. Follow him on Twitter at GMartLive. Of course, all of his stuff up on USCFootball.com. You can follow me on Twitter if you want. I'm at Inside Troy. And thanks so much for tuning in to the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, and we will talk to you next time.